are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name is Patricia Train. I'm your host, and I am joined by Jerry Foley, who is the senior editor of Giant Insider, does a great job along with Chris Bizziano. The two of them tell it the way it is, and they're always a joy to have on the show. And Jerry, welcome to the program. The season is finally over.
Yeah, Patty, thanks for having me as usual. Thankfully it's over is an understatement. This was a disaster. There were some decent aspects to this season, but the way they've lost a lot of these games, Patty, was just, you couldn't wait for this to get over with, to be honest with you.
Yes, and what we're going to do on today's program is we're actually going to talk about some of the deficiencies of this team, you know, which have just plagued them all year long. We're going to talk about some of the bright spots, and we're going to kind of have an eye on 2019, because really, the 2018 is in the books. And now it's all about what they do moving forward. So, Jerry, let's start with the offensive side of the ball. And, I'm going to say Eli Manning for last, because that's a topic we can really, talk about all day. But let's start with a good thing, and that is Saquon Barkley. I mean, the kid today set some new records. But I'll tell you, the thing that really impressed me about this kid, and I tweeted this, is that after the game, he was sitting at his locker upset, and he was talking with myself and Chris, as a matter of fact, for a little bit, and he was just, Chris was trying to console him, because Saquon Barkley felt as though he hadn't done enough, that it was almost like he took the season's result personally, because he hadn't done enough. And we were trying to explain to him that look, you're just one piece of the puzzle, and it was a new team, new coaching staff, everything had to gel together. But what else can you say about this kid? He's just been an absolute professional. He's been everything I think they've asked for and then some, and he is without a question a cornerstone in this franchise moving forward. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I mean, they should build around him, Patty. He's amazing. And Chris was saying the same thing, that he was at his locker basically saying, hey, hold your head up, Saquon. And Saquon admitted, like, he's never seen losses like this. He's taken them personally. To gain over 2,000 yards, I think as much as Giant fans wanted to say that he was going to have a spectacular rookie year, I think he exceeded all expectations. He broke the Giants rookie record for touchdowns. He, 2,000 yards as a rookie, became only the third player in NFL history to do that. He's amazing, and he's really, what I'm seeing is it's becoming his team. He's becoming kind of a leader on this team at such a young age. I mean, he's on the sidelines trying to rally the troops as they came back and then eventually went ahead, and you thought that maybe they could hold on. But look, he's been everything the Giant fans have wanted and the Giant organization has wanted and then some. He is something you build around, and I still, I know it's a very dated argument, but it's going to go on for a while. I think the Giants made the absolute right choice when they took this kid.
Absolutely. They hadn't had a running game in since Ahmad Bradshaw in 2012. Not only has this kid brought a running game to this team, but he's been an absolute professional. He almost reminds me of a very young Larry Fitzgerald in the way he carries himself.
That's a really good comparison, by the way.
Yeah, he's just really professional. And you think back to what Dave Gettleman said when he was first hired and he was getting ready to go through his first draft with the Giants, and he said, "I want guys who hate to lose."
Yep.
And Barkley fits that to a T. I mean, this kid was absolutely beside himself over how the season had ended and how the game had ended against the Cowboys. How often do you see that? I mean, instead of puffing out his chest, which he had every right to do, see a 21-year-old player sit there and say, "I could have done more." I mean, goodness, I agree with you. Build around him. He's tremendous.
Yeah, and for someone at that age to understand that it's a team sport and that the stats don't mean anything, and you still hear guys saying, my goal next year is to get this many yards and do this, and I'm going to have my best season. Barkley's not that guy. Barkley wants to win, and that's really it. And you saw it today. You see it every week now with him. The, you know, how down he is after the games are over when they lose. And I was going to add also another guy that hates to lose. He was fighting at the very end of that game was Will Hernandez. So, you know, Gettleman drafted two guys in the first two rounds, man. If he had a home run with Barkley, he had a stand-up double with Will Hernandez, because that's a kid who's gotten better as the season has gone on, and also showed you by the fighting he was getting in against Jalen Smith, the linebacker from Dallas. You know, he's another one who doesn't like to lose. And you know, for all of Gettleman's faults with free agency, and Solder actually has worked out, and some other guys have, the draft, this past draft was very good. And Gettleman wanted to get a guy who he said was touched by the hand of God and going to wear a gold jacket. And man, Barkley is on his way. I mean, it's scary to think what he can do behind an even better offensive line next year.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned Will Hernandez, and the one thing that I've noticed with him is that the more confidence he's gotten, he's become a nastier player on the field. And, you know, you mentioned Nate Solder, and it's funny because Chris and I were talking about this in the press box. We were talking about how, you know, they had to overspend to get Nate Solder in here, but, you know, he's been better than Eric Flowers, but he's also been a tremendous influence on Will Hernandez. He has helped him, and I don't think a lot of people really understand the dynamics between offensive linemen and how they have to work together. In order to work together, you got to be able to trust the guy next to you that he's guiding you the right way. And Nate Solder, you know, to me, I think deserves a world of credit for helping Will Hernandez, who played at UTEP, remember. We're not talking major competition here, but he helped this young man, you know, learn about what it takes to be a pro with the NFL and just basically how to sharpen his tools, if you will, and go out there and compete.
And he lost every game his senior year at UTEP. So, you know, he's fed up with losing. And I like that about him. And look, when the season started, I think every Giants fan, myself included, was guilty of this. You thought that, the left side of the line is solidified. But it really wasn't, because they hadn't played together yet. So it took about eight games. And then eight games in, it seems like he didn't hear Nate Solder's name called anymore. And Solder had a history of starting off slow and then getting better as the season went on. But those two are complementing each other nicely right now. And that's why going forward, if you can build up that right side, whether that means Yamon Brown comes back or you get another guard, you know, the offense is going to be that much better with the weapons they have, and seeing guys like Evan Engram step up the last few weeks and Barkley doing what he did. And look, Eli Manning has time. He can still beat you. So, you know, fixing the right side of that line to try and replicate what they did on the left side is going to be huge going forward.
I tell you, Jerry, you're reading my mind here, because you mentioned Evan Engram. He's another kid who, you know, once he shook off the injury issues that he had earlier in the year, he's really finished strong. And, you know, how nice was it to see that Pat Shurmur finally started using him more as a, you know, as a receiver, you know, a guy split out wide, you know, as opposed to an inline blocker, which just was not his strength. And boy, did we see a turnaround in his stats, because, you know, if I have to go back and look, but I'd be willing to bet he has really done most of his damage, if you will, in the last several weeks when he's been used more of as a receiver as opposed to an inline blocker.
Yeah, and it seems like he's averaging like, what, five receptions for like 70 or 80 yards, which is perfect for him. And when he came out of college, he had the comparison with Jordan Reed, and you thought, man, if we get half the player Jordan Reed is, we'll be pretty happy. And like you said, he was injured early in the season, so he was battling through some drops, but that game against Houston, I forget the defensive back, Chris would have remembered because he called him out on it, was hitting everybody low. He hit Barkley low, and he injured Engram pretty well. And I think Engram missed like three or four games because of it. But now that he's healthy, I mean, you could see the explosiveness. You could see that he's a 4-4 guy, catches the ball, he takes off, and he's a mismatch for linebackers, and he's too big for safeties and corners. So, I'd love to see next year, and we keep saying this, but I'd love to see next year if they can build up that line and see what Engram can add to this offense as a true weapon and second year in the offense. He's only going to get better. The kid has a great attitude. And we tweeted earlier, you know, as a Giant fan, you got to be rooting for this kid, not only because of the talent he has, but because what a good kid he is and how hard he's been trying. And it's just great to see him being able to finally show his explosive abilities.
Absolutely. Jerry, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to address the elephant in the room, and that, of course, is Eli Manning. So, folks, stay with us. Welcome back to Locked On Giants. We are with Patricia Traina, and I'm joined by special guest Jerry Foley of Giant Insider. Does a terrific job. Make sure you're checking him and Chris Bisiano out on Twitter. They're at Giant Insider, and they have their publication, and Jerry will tell you about that at the end of the show. But Jerry, let's continue looking at the highs and the lows and spinning forward, if we will, to 2019. And I know a very, very hot topic that has absolutely divided the fan base. It is, to an extent, divided the media, is Eli Manning and whether or not he still has what it takes to be competitive, to be, you know, to win games. And, you know, the haters will look at Eli and say, well, he didn't make the throws to get them into, you know, field goal range. And, you know, they'll point to the mistakes and the fact that he's getting old and that he's not mobile and he's not this, he's not that. But, you know, I listen to, you know, Shermer talk. I listen to Eli talk. And it sounds to me like both sides want each other next year. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he's coming back. And look, you called it perfectly. The fan base is split, I think, 50-50 down. I mean, right down the middle on this issue. And you see it, and I'm sure you see it as much as I do, on Twitter. You get involved in these responses because people are responding back and forth with a little vitriol towards each other, and at Patty Train and at Giant Insider kind of caught in the middle. Look, I think they're going to come back with him. Whether they draft a quarterback in the first round or second round next year, or this year coming up, I should say, it remains to be seen. Maybe they'll have Manning tutor someone or mentor someone for a year. But I think the Giants look at it and say, what's the alternative? I mean, you saw the Saints today with Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, that has to be put to bed now. I mean, he was absolutely terrible today. I think they were getting shut out when he went out of the game, and I'm not sure what the final score was. But Manning, I think, wants to come back. I think Shermer wants him back. It's going to be another year with this offense. And I truly believe that the Giants feel that if they can build up the offensive line in front of him, he can be effective. Now, like you said, the issue with Manning is he was never mobile, but he was at least pocket mobile. He's losing that. But when they roll him out, he's effective. I mean, he's been effective on the run this year. There's two concerns for me. One, his touchdowns were not high this year. So no matter what the stats were, he had his highest completion percentage. He had over 4,000 yards passing. The touchdowns weren't where you'd like them to be. And also just the pocket mobility when the rush comes, and no fault of his own because of the past history of the Giants drafting, the inability of Reese to put an offensive line in front of him. He feels the rush a little faster than he used to. And he doesn't move around the pocket as much as he used to. That's all.
Yeah. And you know, look, a lot of people accuse me of being an Eli homer. And here's my response to that for what it's worth. It's not a question of whether I want Eli back or I don't want him back. I look at the scenario and I don't, Jerry, you've been a Giant fan. You've covered the Giants for a while, right? You probably were a fan before you got into this business. Okay. Yep. So do you remember what happened when the Giants moved on from Phil Sims?
Yes. Dave Brown, Kent Graham, Danny Cannell, Kerry Collins in that order. Then even Jesse Palmer for one game. So it was quarterback hell for a while.
Okay. And the reason, part of the reason for that and is that, as I recall, they cut Phil Sims after he had had shoulder surgery. I believe he was coming off of a Pro Bowl season that year, and he had a high salary cap, and there was concerns that, you know, he you know, they were going to have to pay him all this money and he wouldn't be ready. Now, they had drafted Dave Brown in the first round of the supplemental draft, I believe in 92, right?
Yep, that's right. You're right.
Yeah. So and in his first 2 years behind Sims, I think Dave Brown played in, I want to say, 3 games total, none as a starter, just kind of mop-up duty.
Yep.
And we all know how that worked out. I think he had one winning season, and that was actually a season where he got injured and Danny Cannell took over and finished the season up. I think Dave Brown got injured, I want to say, at week 6. He had a chest injury. Danny Cannell took over, and I think they finished with a winning record. So I can't see the Giants making that same mistake again at quarterback, to where they say, okay, you know what, Eli? Screw you. Goodbye. Here's your gold watch. Go off into retirement. I firmly believe, And I know this is not going to sit well with the anti-Eli crowd,
Right.
but I firmly believe they are going to bring Eli back next year. I think Eli wants to come back next year, and he is going to be very much a part of that transition to whoever the new quarterback is. Like you said, you know, Teddy Bridgewater didn't have a very good day. You know, I can't see Nick Foles getting out of Philly, and if he does get out of Philly, he's going to probably command a big amount of money that I don't think the Giants are going to be in a position to pay. The draft class now, you know, everybody's saying Dwayne Haskins. I don't believe he has declared as we record this show. You know, Justin Herbert has decided to stay in school. The quarterback class, I'm not so sure there is a guy who's going to be worth taking at number six. I think if anything, maybe you try and get a guy, you know, early in the second round, or maybe you even look to trade back into the bottom of the first round and take a guy that you might develop if there is somebody you like. But if not, you wait till 2020 and you build up your draft capital, and then you've got bargaining chips to move around and move up. Very similar to what the Chiefs did when they were trying to get Pat Mahomes, and I think the Bills did the same thing. They had all this draft capital, and they moved up to get their quarterback. So I just think that those of you who want Eli Manning gone, I'm sorry, I don't think it makes sense, and I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, you gave the one name where I thought if it does happen, it's the only possibility would be Nick Foles. But like you said, now, especially as well as he's playing, first off, there's got to be a quarterback controversy eventually in Philly with him leading them to the playoffs and Wentz being hurt. And, you know, you don't know if Wentz is going to be Ben Roethlisberger or RG3 at this point of his career. So that's the only name that would make sense if the Giants could make it work from a salary perspective. But you're right. The only thing I fear is if you go with Eli another year, which I think they're going to do that, like you said, and I just don't want to wait for 2020 and say, you know, because then are you just going to bring in a rookie like Tua, Herbert, whoever it's going to be, because that's going to be a strong draft class with Fromm as well from Georgia. Are you just going to hand over the reins of the franchise to them without a veteran? Because then you'd have to sign Eli for another year. I don't know what the Giants are thinking of doing, but I think you nailed it. I think the Giants would consider a quarterback in the second round, or like you said, trading back, maybe a Will Greer or a Daniel Jones from Duke type of this year. But it's going to be interesting. I think Eli is coming back, but it remains to be seen what the Giants do going forward with regard to their backup or what the future plan is, because I don't know if they just want to go cold in 2020 with a brand new quarterback with no one to kind of, like when Manning started, he had Kurt Warner come in and kind of help him, and Warner was a late pickup. But you know, that's the only caveat I would put on it is if you transition to a new quarterback in 2020, are you going to go cold with a rookie? Or you're going to have a veteran to come in and kind of assist in the process. That's all.
No, I get your point, and I agree with you. But what I could see happening is very similar to what the Chiefs did with when they had Alex Smith and Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
You know, give them an opportunity to play in a game, which I believe they did. And then, you know, like I've been telling people, yes, you want to lower Eli's cap number next year. And the way you do it is you add an extra year on and you take some of that base salary and you convert it to a signing bonus or incentives even. And then this way you can spread it over the remaining 2 years of the cap, because people say, oh, restructure. You can't restructure if the guy only has 1 year left on his
contract. Right.
You've got to give him an extra year.
Yeah.
So now let's say you take five, you know, you shave Eli's base salary, which I believe is $11 million. You cut that down by $5 million. So now you're adding on an extra $2.5 million to 2019, and you're spilling over $2.5 million into 2020, to where if you get your guy in 2019 and you say, okay, you know what, we feel comfortable turning the reins over to him, now you can cut bait with Eli and say, you know, look, thanks for everything, and it's only going to cost you $2.5 million, hypothetically, which is nothing compared to the, you know, given that the salary cap is projected to go over $200 million in 2020.
No, and that would be a great option if they do that, Patty. I mean, if they can do that next year, add another year, and then basically lower next year's number, but add another season on, and then bring in that quarterback in 2020, I think that might be the best scenario. It just remains to be seen what they're going to do next year. If they're going to, I mean, would they be, so much changes between now and the draft, right? I mean, a lot of these scouts, they see these guys at the combine and they fall in love with them, right? They're throwing in shorts and all of a sudden they're throwing beautifully and hitting everybody, and they're throwing 70-yard bombs, and it's like, okay, that's the quarterback I want. So You know, it looks like Haskins will be at the top of the draft, but it is a weaker quarterback draft than you know what it could have been if Herbert came out, or what last year was, or what 2020 looks like it's going to be. So it'll be interesting. I do agree with you, though. I think Manning will come back, and you know the this draft will be stockpiling either picks or really shoring up that defense, because you know I'm sure that's the next segment we're going to talk about is making the Giants defense great again. So
and one last point on the quarterback situation. You know, now with the draft orders set, the Giants are going to pick sixth, but in front of them you've got the Raiders and the Bucks. Now if the Raiders decide they want to move on from Derek Carr, they're going to be in the market for a quarterback, and I believe the Bucks are going to be in the market for a quarterback. So yep. I'm not so sure that even if Haskins gets into the draft and declares, that he would even fall down to the Giants at six. I mean,
yeah,
possibly. I don't know. I mean, again, the kid's got to declare before we can even have this discussion, but you've got to see. And there's no guarantee that he's going to be there. And even if he is there, I don't know. Is he you know, going to be worth that type? Is he going to have a sixth round grade? I don't think that he will, but you know, I obviously, you know, the team always feels differently. They look at their board differently than the rest of us do. So it'll be an interesting scenario for sure.
Yeah. And you have to think Jacksonville, even though they're behind us, are going to want to trade up and get a quarterback as well. So that's another team that's going to want to try. Denver will probably try and trade up. So there's going to be a ton of teams. I mean, if you have the first or second pick and there's one quarterback that's out there and these teams all want them, you know, you can really, really stockpile draft picks. I just think looking at the Giants, if you can't see that you have to improve the pass rush, the safety position and the offensive line, I mean, those three things, I mean, and I would say in order, honestly, it's the pass rush, the offensive line, and then probably the secondary / linebackers. I mean, if you can't see that, then you're never going to convince anyone that Eli Manning deserves another year to come back. So,
yeah, I agree. Jerry, let's take our final break and we'll actually dive a little bit more into a little more detail about that defense. So folks, stay with us.
Hey, Giant fans, watching football is fun, but it's even more entertaining when you have some action on the games. Guys, you've heard me talking about this for weeks and some of you are still on the sidelines. So whether you're an expert or a rookie, you should be betting at MyBookie. If you like to bet a little and win a lot, MyBookie gives you that chance. For example, pick three teams to win, and if you hit all three, you can turn $100 into $600. There's so much to bet on: college basketball, college football, NBA, NHL, and even esports. MyBookie is the one bet I know you'll be happy with all year. MyBookie has been in business for years. They've got great online reviews, and their mobile site is easy to use. Sign up this week, and MyBookie will give you a 50% deposit bonus to jumpstart your bankroll. Also, make sure you're following BetMyBookie on Twitter. They personally respond to every mention and DM, not to mention they've given away more than $10,000 in free money to their followers during this football season. Log on to MyBookie right now and use the promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% deposit bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Jerry Foley. He's the senior editor at Giant Insider, and we are kind of looking at the Giants roster, you know, just talking about cornerstones, you know, key pieces that they can keep, where they have to improve. We're starting to look towards 2019, even though we are now, you know, in the final day of 2018, you know, it's never too early. So, Jerry, we've touched a little bit on the defense in the last segment, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I think every position, from the defensive line all the way back to the secondary, is in need of a talent upgrade, because this is now four games in a row. Well, not in a row, but four games this season that the defense has failed to close out the game and hold the lead for the offense. And you know, we saw guys missing tackles. I mean, Curtis Riley, did you see that one?
Oh, my God.
What was that? I mean,
that's a play where you just have to – question somebody's heart. And I hate doing that because
you
never want to do that. But I mean, he didn't even attempt to tackle him. I don't know what he was thinking on that.
And he got pulled, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he got pulled.
Pat Shurmur pulled him. But, you know, let's start up front with that defensive line. You know, B.J. Hill, he's definitely a keeper. You know, Dalvin Tomlinson's a keeper. Kerry Wynn has, I think, played himself into another contract. He had a very good year. But the biggest problem I think I see with that defensive line is they need some more bodies there. I don't think they have that deep rotation that Gettleman ideally likes in order to, you know, keep guys fresh. Because how many times have we seen it? They get to the fourth quarter, and because they've been on the field a lot, they're, you know, to use Gettleman's terms, they're standing there with their tongue hanging out.
Yeah, I think if you look at that line, like you said, B.J. Hill's a keeper. Did he end up leaving the team in sacks, or did Vernon overtake him today?
I think Vernon topped them.
Up until this game, Hill was leading in sacks. Dalvin Tomlinson's a good player. But, you know, Tomlinson and Wynn, and Wynn, you're right, did earn another contract. They're nice role players right now in their career, especially Dalvin Tomlinson. He could get better. But for me, I just think if you look at that defense, you could make the argument that they need six starters, right? I mean, a free safety, a corner opposite of Jenkins, probably two linebackers, and maybe one or two defensive linemen. So, yeah, there are some keepers. I think Lorenzo Carter, B.J. Hill, Tomlinson's a keeper on a rotational basis. Morrow's a nice player, but they don't have that, you know, they don't have what Vernon was supposed to be this year, that menacing edge rusher, or even doesn't have to be edge rusher, could be coming from the middle, an Aaron Donald type to get the sack when you need it and to close out games. Because, you know, there is, unless they blitz, there is absolutely zero pass rush, and it is crippling the entire team, not just the defense.
Yeah, and you know, the thing with Vernon, you know, I kind of go back and forth with that.
Yep.
Because the draft class is said to be very deep in pass rushers, not just outside edge rushers, but also interior guys who can push the pocket and get to the quarterback. And Vernon has, I think, a $19 million cap hit next year. Now, look, I'll never blame a guy for injuries, because they do happen, and it is not the player's fault. With that said, I'm just wondering, you know, what do you do with a guy like Vernon? Do you say to him, hey, look, we want you back, but you're going to have to take a pay cut? Or do you just cut bait on the guy and start fresh with the draft?
He always reminded me of like a second tier type of pass rusher. Like, he needed someone else in front of him to really excel. So I think with the cap number that he has, he's going to have to take a pay cut, or they're going to get rid of him. And the thing Carl Banks always says, if you get rid of guys, then you got to replace them right away. So if you needed five or six guys, well, now you need six or seven. So I would try to keep him. And I know he's another one, the fan base, I would say, is even more towards getting rid of someone like Olivier Vernon, but he still has talent. And you saw today, he had three sacks. I mean, when he's healthy, he can get to the pass rusher. He's good against the run when he's healthy. It was, and you know, he had a bad luck year. He had a high ankle sprain early on, and he's a speed player. So when that happens, he's limited in his mobility. So I would try and renegotiate him, see if he can come back, and then add, like I said, a pass rusher, a defensive player early in the first or second round this year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's some value to Vernon. He's only 28.
Yeah.
You know, again, I'm not going to fault him for the injuries. You know, it's been unfortunate, but we saw him in the spring, and he looked like he was just going to be an absolute terror. But, you know, you think back on his career. You know, he played in Miami. He had Cam Wake on the other side of him.
Yep.
You know, and when he got to New York, he had JPP.
Yep.
And he needs somebody to compliment him, I think, in order to keep, you know, offensive lines off of him, doubling him up, tripling him up, whatever. And, you know, he needs to find a way to stay healthy. I know, again, injuries happen, but he's had a couple of crippling things, both with the ankle, I think the same ankle. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be back from a cap perspective. I would be surprised if he's back because of the salary. And he's also a very proud young man, so I don't know that he would necessarily take a cap reduction. But with that said, you know, given that the draft class is so rich in pass rushers, you kind of wonder, you know, maybe he might, you know, because now is he going to get the type of money, even with a reduction, would he get that same money if he were to go start someplace else?
Yeah, and other teams are watching too. I mean, what are they going to pay him, right? I mean, you hit the nail on the head early on when you said that Gettleman wants a lot of bodies. I just think the Giants need more defensive linemen that can make an impact. Not even you don't need three more stars. You don't need OCU Manura, Strahan, Tuck, and Kiwanuka, but you need more than what you have now. So if you can get a nice rotation, like you look at the Eagles, what they have, if you took those guys individually outside of Fletcher Cox, I don't think any of those guys on that team are the best at their position in the league, but you have Chris Long, you have Brandon Graham, you have Bennett, you have guys that can rush the passer. And when they're fresh, you know, that's when they're effective. I think that's what the Giants need and what Gettleman wants to build. And I think if you keep Vernon somehow, and if he's not too proud to take a pay cut, I think it can be effective still. And I think Giant fans need to realize that he is not, you know, he's not a top five pass rusher, but he can be very effective, like you said, with someone complimenting him.
Absolutely. And you know, look, the guy is, he doesn't say much. He's a, you know, he works his tail off, but, you know, I kind of would like to see him back, but I think the business side of me is saying that he probably won't be.
Yep.
And, but we'll see what happens. I mean, stranger things have happened. And then, you know, also on the linebackers, let's talk just real quick about the inside guys, because, you know, we don't really discuss that when we look at cap hits and whatnot, but, BJ Goodson, and Alec Ogletree. Now, I believe Alec Ogletree has an $11 million cap hit. I'm going to look that up real quick. But I know he's got a big cap figure for next year. What would you do with him?
Ogletree came on late, right? So he struggled early on against covering running backs and tight ends. And then by the end of the season, he was seemed to be intercepting everything. He was all over the field. And you know, he had a bad game against Tennessee where he got blocked by Marcus Mariota and got the concussion. But, you know, I leave all the cap stuff to the capologists, the general managers. If I could, I would like to renegotiate his. I don't know if they can. Like, I don't know the details of his contract. But if they can renegotiate his and get his cap number down a bit, I'd be for him coming back. I think he turned out to be a very good defensive player. We kept saying he's the best linebacker they've had since Antonio Pierce, especially in the middle. And he's active, right? He had a couple pick sixes, and it was all over the field towards the end of the season. So that was the guy we all thought we were getting. And you have to keep in mind that we have to sign Landon Collins too. Mm-hmm. So there's only so much money to go around on the defensive side of the ball, even though the cap's going up and they'll be under the cap. But I would love Ogletree to come back. I think he was when he was healthy and in the game, I think he was the unquestioned leader of the defense.
Right, and I'm looking at it. I finally pulled this contract up. He's got a $4 million base salary, $1.75 prorated signing bonus, and a $6 million roster bonus. So that brings him up to $11.75 million as a cap number.
Yeah.
And those roster bonuses, oh, they're such killers. I mean, yep. I know why GMs and capologists put them in there, but when you see that, you know what? I just might... With Ogletree, like you said, he did come on, you know, maybe like the rest of the defensive players, he had to learn the system, and he did prove to be a leader and whatnot. So I might leave his contract as is rather than say, okay, let's rework that number. Because remember, they reworked his number last year in order to fit him on under their cap. So I might leave that one as is and like I said, see if I can get Vernon to agree to redo his number, you know, whether I tack on, you know, incentives or maybe I tack on, you know, I do something, a roster bonus or something to get that number down. But you know, you mentioned Landon Collins, and I don't know if you saw this. I wrote an article for Forbes. Everybody's talking about, you know, franchising Collins. I wouldn't rule out the fact that they might transition tag him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No one brings that up either except you. So good job by you, because that's something we thought of as well. Like, why wouldn't they transition tag him? I completely agree. And real quick before I wanted to say one more thing about Ogletree. When you look at the defense, Patty, like, he's so far down the list of things that are wrong with the defense, right? There's so many, there's got to be five or six or seven other things before him. Like, then this is to the point we were saying before, if you get rid of Ogletree, well, then you got to replace him too. So it becomes a numbers game. Like, are you really going to have, you know, eight new starters on defense next year? Because you probably need at least four or five guys that are going to be starting on that defense next year. At least four that weren't there this year. So if you do Ogletree as well, that's another problem. But yeah, to your point about Collins, you're right. Why wouldn't they transition him? And you know, the franchise tag is something everybody's brought up. But you know, you only had to do was watch the Tennessee Titans game, right? And to see how much they missed Landon Collins because nobody could tackle Henry. Nobody could tackle the tackling in that game on defense was disgraceful, especially in the secondary. So he's a vital cog in that defense. He's someone that they want to bring back. I think he could be really effective with a ball hawking free safety, which is something that's really needed on this defense that they don't have.
Yes, I think everybody will agree on that. Curtis Riley, a converted corner, you know, tried to make the switch over, but just not the right fit, and they got to address that. You know, I don't know who's out there. I think I just had a name and it just popped out in my head. It's a veteran, Earl Thomas, I think, is going to be a free agent if he's healthy. I know some people have asked me about him. I think he might be too cost prohibited. But you know, safety aside, here's the big question for me, and that is at cornerback.
Yeah.
Do you keep Janoris Jenkins another year? Because, you know, look, we know Sam Beal is probably going to be a starter next year. They drafted him in the third round of the supplemental draft. But for me, Janoris Jenkins, and I've gone back and forth, do they keep him? Do they dump him? And I don't know if it's just me and my interpretation, but it just looked like when they were out of it, Janoris Jenkins has looked disinterested at times in the games.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that more last year than this year, and I do think Shurmur likes him. I think I've always guessed all along that they're going to get rid of Vernon and keep Jenkins, because I think Jenkins' cap number is way lower than Vernon's. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it's $9 million or $8.5 next year, and I think that's right. But I all along I've been saying it's going to be Vernon that goes. And another problem, right? If you get rid of Jenkins, then you really have question marks. You have to draft a corner then in the first three rounds, unless you're going to go out and get a free agent. I agree. I think Sam Beal will be the other starter. I mean, B.W. Webb, God bless him. He tried, and he was pretty good early on, but towards the end of the season, I mean, he really struggled. But you know, a pleasant surprise on that defense has been Grant Haley. He got hurt today, but he's turned out to be a pretty good slot corner. And it's not just about drafting, right? It's about finding the undrafted free agents. And Gettleman, he did that in Carolina with Norwell, the guard, and he did it this year with Grant Haley, with Ty Davis, who's been a pretty good linebacker for them. So I actually think they're going to keep Jenkins next year. And you know, we were talking about it before. I would love to see them renegotiate Vernon, but if I had to pick between the two, I would think Vernon goes and Jenkins stays.
I'm looking at the contracts now. Jenkins has a $14.75 million cap hit,
wow,
which is 5th on the team. Eli is first. Beckham will be second. Yeah. Vernon third. Solders fourth. And Jenkins will be fifth. And Ogletree, by the way, is behind Jenkins. So, but Jenkins also has a $1 million roster bonus. That to me is a little easier, I think, to swallow. You know, I can kind of see that, but I don't. Let me see. Is this next year the last year of Jenkins's deal? I think it is. It's either next year or the year after. But let me just. No, he's got another year. So if you cut him, but see, here's the thing. Okay, so if you cut him, you save $7.75 million, but you take a, let's see, let me make sure I got the right guy here. Okay, I do. Just all right. So if you cut him, you get hit with a $7 million dead money hit. So really, if you're totaling up your net savings, $7.75 million, you're only saving $750,000 on the transaction. So
right.
here's how I see it. I think one of Vernon or Jenkins is not going to be on this team next year. I think whoever they cut is going to be designated as a post June 1st transaction, which will allow them to use that money after June 1st. They can use it to sign their draft class. They can use that money to pick up any, you know, back free agents on the back end of the free agency period and get them through the season for any emergency. So that's how I see that playing out. But, you know, the question again becomes which of those two, if not both, maybe it's both, we don't know, but who do they ultimately say, you know what, we can live without this guy because we're going to go and replace him in the draft.
Yeah. And I would bet on Vernon only because of how deep the draft is at pass rusher, right? If it was a corner draft, it's one thing, but there's so many pass rushers coming out. I just think that the Giants would probably feel like if we can save this much money by getting rid of Vernon's salary or most of it, and then bringing in a young pass rusher, that would be the smarter thing to do. I didn't realize Jenkins was that high, but I also think, I do think they, again, it's the argument I made before, if you're cutting these big salaries, you're going to have to replace them. Cutting Jenkins and going with Sam Beal and, you know, cornerback to be named later, whether it's from the draft or a veteran, I think they'd err on the side of keeping Jenkins, even though it's a bigger salary. And kind of at least solidifying that side of the field down, especially if, like you said early on, you know, maybe he looked a little disinterested when they started losing. But I just still remember him from 2 years ago. He was, one of the best defensive players on the field for them. He's flashed this year, especially when they started winning, how well he played. He played great against the Chicago Bears. So I think they'll keep him next year. I hope they do. And I think, you know, he can be a key part to the revitalization of this defense if they build around him, players like Collins, and like I said, even someone like B.J. Hill. So
yeah, I think you're right, Jerry, because, look, the back end of the defense, you know, needs the front end of the defense to do its job. And
yep.
I think we can agree that the front end of the defense didn't do its job the way I think they hoped for. So, you know, definitely going to be an interesting decision for Dave Gettleman to make. The decisions, of course, will start. The Giants are going to start their evaluations, I believe, probably on Monday, today, after they, you know, had gotten through with the media. As we record this, by the way, we're actually recording it on a Sunday night after the game. So just for an FYI, folks, the players and Pat Shurmur will address the media on Monday, and then Dave Gettleman will address the media on Wednesday. Now, no word if John Mara is going to speak to the media yet. Right now, he's not on the schedule, but we'll see if they add him in at the last minute. But going to be very interesting. It's going to be a very interesting offseason. A lot of decisions that need to be made. You know, we mentioned Eli. We mentioned, you know, who's going to stay, who's going to go. And, you know, Pat Shurmur, to his credit, said he's got it all mapped out, how he wants January, February, March, and April to look. And look, you know, I'm ready to sweep 2018 into the gutter and start fresh.
Yeah, I think every Giant fan is. And one thing, Patty, I was going to say, you have to admit, and everybody has to, that Shurmur, you can get on him for his play calling, and, you know, four passes at the end of that game were very weird when you get to the 49-yard line and you have Barkley on your team. But look, these players play for him. I mean, it makes for excruciating losses, but they're in almost every game they've played. I mean, the only two I would say they weren't in were the first Eagle game and the first Cowboy game for most of it. But even the Tennessee game, that was a 7-point game, even though it felt like 40 points midway through the third quarter. So the one thing Shurmur's done well is he's had his finger on the pulse of the team. They play hard for him. It's just a matter of they're just not talented enough. They're not talented enough in the trenches. And then even, like we said, safety position, corner, you know, all over their roster. When you overturn 30-plus guys, you have a personnel problem. And I think we realized that early on.
Yes, indeed. And from here on in, hopefully it's nowhere to go but up. So, all right, Giant fans, before I sign off, Jerry, tell everybody where they can find all the work you and Chris are doing.
Sure, thanks. www.thegiantinsider.com. That's where you can subscribe to our newsletter. And then on Twitter, @GiantInsider. And we have a podcast that we drop on Monday and Thursday nights.
And I'm sure yours is going to be epic as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. These are very raw wounds. We'll record this probably tomorrow morning, and Chris and I will we'll have an epic rant together. So.
Oh, I can't wait to hear who gets inducted into the buffoon crew now.
Look at you listening. Thank you, Pat.
Brilliant. That's brilliant, by the way. And Giant fans, just to give you a heads up on what you can expect on the Locked On Giants podcast. As of right now, I'm planning Twitter Tuesday, but I probably will also have some quotes and audio from the locker room from Pat Shurmur. Probably will break some of that down. So it depends on whether or not I have enough Twitter Tuesday questions. If not, we'll move Twitter Tuesday to Twitter Thursday. Wednesday, as I mentioned, Dave Gettleman is scheduled to talk, so I'll have audio on that. Coming up Friday, that's a show you're not going to want to miss because I have one Jim Nagy coming on the program. Jim Nagy is the new executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, and we had a wonderful conversation talking about the new programs that he has in place, and importantly, talking about the depth of talent that is shaping up in the draft. And Jim Nagy, for those who don't know, he's a 18-year veteran of the NFL scouting landscape. So when he talks about, you know, the different position groups and says, you know, oh, you know, the NFL community is seeing this group differently than the public, you might want to pay attention, folks, because obviously the man knows what he's talking about. That show will drop on Friday, so do make sure you check it out. Make sure you check out all the podcasts coming this week as we start to break down the Giants' 2018 season and look ahead to 2019. Folks, thank you, as always, for listening. Jerry, thank you for your time, as always, and we'll talk again soon. This is Patricia Trainis, signing signing off. Take care.